When General George Washington successfully led the American Revolution against the most powerful military force in the world, that of the British Empire, King George III reportedly said that if Washington laid down his sword after his stunning, startling, and world-altering victory, he would be regarded as the greatest man in the world. That is precisely what Washington did. At the conclusion of the Revolutionary War, he went before the Continental Congress in Annapolis, Maryland on December 23, 1783, laid down his weapon, and made a brief speech. After celebrations and after commemorations, he left and went home to become, again, Planter Washington. He was eager to return to his beloved wife Martha and his cherished Mount Vernon, which he hadn't been to in 7 years, except briefly to entertain some French officers while on his way to Yorktown, and a date with destiny against General Charles Cornwallis, to get back to the life of the gentleman farmer he so loved. In character, he gave the credit for the miracle of the American Revolution to others. "Your Excellency is retired, like another Cincinnatus," wrote the Marquis de Chateauneuf at the close of the Revolutionary War. Lucius Quintius Cincinnatus, about 2,250 years earlier, having won against the fierce Equians as a Roman general, refused absolute power and instead went back to his farm and his plow. One of Washington's generals, the redoubtable and later Secretary of War Henry Knox, formed the Society of the Cincinnati in 1783, comprising Washington's commanders in the field from the Revolution and their descendants. The Society exists today and has a national office in Washington, D.C. Washington did not just arrive without cause at his exalted status. Beloved by his fellow countrymen for over 200 years, with children, cities, including Washington, D.C. in 1791, monuments, mountains, schools, even states and holidays named in his honor, and later, as the standard by which all future presidents would be measured, recorded as also the greatest president by most historians, a man who would be widely revered for his integrity, grace, manners, charm, Christian faith, and humility. His devout mother played a key role in the development of his character. While he was sometimes described as having little genuine affection for Mary, the reserved Washington still credited her with his principled and moral upbringing. Indeed, this was inevitable, for when George was 11, his father died, leaving Mary Washington a single mother. The relationship with his own mother was laden with difficulty for both of them. Self-centered and acquisitive, Mary Ball Washington was preoccupied with her eldest son, to the virtual exclusion of her other 4 children. That preoccupation expressed itself in fears for George's safety, pleas not to put himself at risk in military action, and demands for assistance, usually monetary, even though she continued to occupy and enjoy the profits of his property on the Rappahannock, said Patricia Brady in Martha Washington, An American Life. Another book described her as cantankerous and demanding. His father, Augustine Gus, had a noble appearance and manly proportions. As a youngster, George traveled far and wide visiting friends and relatives, and he was away when he learned that his father was dying. He returned immediately to Ferry Farm on April 12, 1743, the day his father died. His father was stretched out on a bed pending his burial. He may have been an absentee parent, but his sudden loss left an emptiness in George's life, a vacuum that needed to be filled. George was just 11 years old. Augustine's will was shortly probated, and he left his son George the plantation of Ferry Farm, an equal division of slaves and estate, and a lot in the newly formed and nearby town of Fredericksburg. Mary was to supervise the children until they came of age.